This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. This is New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell. Glad you're with us today. And coming up on the show, many of our favorite partners, including Leibel Sternbach is here, Joe McKenzie, and friends from AARP Minnesota. All this plus the words to the wise on New Beginnings. And our program is underway right now. Joining us today is Dr. Michael Osterholm, epidemiologist and advisor to presidents of the United States, and we're talking about COVID-19. Doctor, can you tell us where we stand right now with regard to COVID-19 cases, not only in Minnesota, but across the country?
I think that adding certain context can surely help keep things in perspective. I worry that I have far too many colleagues who are willing to go out there and in terms that I think suggest a crisis ahead are talking about things like surges without ever defining what they mean. They're talking about the concept of triple-demics, a term I categorically reject. These are the same people that last year warned us about the triple-demic, said it was here when in fact we had an early influenza season that turned out to be normal in terms of average season. It just was displaced time-wise when it started to a 6 to 8 week earlier schedule. And I just want to say that I think at this point we have to be very, very careful here to provide conclusions like seasonality or that what's going to happen with RSV and influenza together with COVID. There's just a lot of context here that I surely in almost my 50 years in this business can't tell you what this means in terms of tomorrow or the month or the 6 month period afterwards. At the same time, it is important to acknowledge that there does seem to be some trends in places like the U.S. and the U.K. and other parts of the world. So I don't want to minimize that. What I want to do is try to provide a sense of future direction with some clarity. When I hear people talk about surges, even if you double these smaller numbers, they are just within really margins of error in these larger numbers. And this is where I worry that we're losing perspective. So I'd like to see us down to zero cases. Trust me, I would. But at the same time, I don't think that the data are there to support what some are suggesting is going to be this new surge. Let me further elaborate on this with the U.S. When you look at a map of the U.S. by different counties, there aren't any clear hotspots of activity when it comes to hospitalizations. Among the handful of counties that the CDC labels as having moderate or high activity with new admissions, the absolute numbers are so low that increases of 50 or 100% in these counties basically represents admissions going from 2 to 4 or from 5 to 10. In fact, if you look at the weekly COVID hospitalizations in the U.S. as reported to CDC, as I mentioned before, we actually had hit the 6,306 level for weekly hospitalizations. And yes, it has gradually climbed up to the point of the 9,056. But to me, this is well within the potentials, you might say, margin of error around a low-level estimate. If you could expect to see, even if cases were not significantly changing, plus or minus 10 or 20% on an estimate, you're well within that margin of error. Fortunately, when it comes to deaths in the U.S., the good news is that we're still seeing record low levels. Of course, deaths are a lagging indicator, so any change might take some time to appear. But otherwise, the latest complete data, which is from the week of July 1st, shows that the number of weekly COVID deaths at 506, which averages out to roughly 72 deaths a day. These data support the fact that whatever variants are circulating out there that we're getting infected with, they are not causing more severe illness, which is really a very, very important point. And so I think that it's really critical to look at what's happening with deaths in the U.S. And just let me say, while the data are incomplete for July, I recognize that, we're talking here about somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 deaths a week occurring here in the United States, where we were at 600 deaths a week in the early part of June. There's one last piece of information that we surely can use to help guide us as to where we're going and how things might shake out. When we look at the wastewater activity, it does provide us some guiding light as to what might be happening. Since June, we've seen levels of SARS-CoV-2 virus detected in wastewater samples increase across the U.S. The two regions in the U.S. reporting the highest concentrations as of late are the Northeast and the South. Both of these regions are now seeing their highest levels since March. However, over the past couple of weeks in the South, things have seemed to flatten out. Still, they're at roughly double the levels reported in June. Again, was a doubling of a smaller number to begin with. The Western U.S. and the Midwest are also seeing upticks in their wastewater data, but as of right now, the levels reported in these two regions remain lower than those in the Northeast and the South. Of course, wastewater data has become an early indicator of changes in activity, so this increase we're seeing across all different regions is something we're keeping a close eye on. That said, when you look at the previous summer surges that people talk about, there are some distinctions, with one primary element being the role that the new variants have played. In the summer of 2021, we saw fairly notable declines in activity from mid-April until the end of June. Of course, around that time, it was also the initial rollout of the vaccines. But starting in July, things took off again, primarily in the southern U.S., and that overlapped with the Delta variant taking off. Well, if you look at the wastewater data from the South during that time, you see a pretty dramatic and consistent surge in the amount of virus being detected. And overall, it extends well beyond the levels we're seeing in any region of the country now. Otherwise, the surge last summer impacted more regions of the country, and that coincided with the rise of BA4 and BA5 variants, followed by BA2.121. And again, the wastewater concentrations reported at that point were also well above what we're seeing now. So obviously, we're seeing increases and things can change, but I strongly believe that the overall levels being reported in wastewater data right now and the rate of change we're seeing have not reached a point where I'm convinced this will be a, quote, summer surge, unquote, that resembles what we've seen in the past. I think that my conclusions are quite consistent with what we just heard from the WHO about the impact of EG as a variant.
Dr. Osterholm, thanks for the update, and you're listening to New Beginnings. Thank you for listening to New Beginnings, and now is time for This Week in History. In 1935, the Social Security Act was signed by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In 1945, former President Harry S. Truman announced that Japan had surrendered to the Allies. The surrender signaled the end of fighting in World War II. In 1951, publisher William Randolph Hearst died at the age of 88. He developed the nation's largest newspaper chain and media company, Hearst Communication. In 1985, Michael Jackson won a bid over Yoko Ono and Paul McCartney to secure the ATV music publishing catalog and was described by industry experts as one of the largest music acquisitions ever by an individual. It was worth $47.5 million. In 1997, Timothy McVeigh was sentenced to death for the 1995 bombing of Oklahoma City's Alfred B. Murr Federal Building. The blast killed 168 people. In 1999, ticket for the Backstreet Boys' North American tour sold out in just a day, generating an estimated $30 million. And just last year, unsealed court papers from the FBI search of former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence showed 11 sets of classified documents recovered. Some of them were labeled as top secret. It happened this week, and I'm Freddie Bell.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com.
Even though the federal COVID public health emergency has ended, it's important to take steps to protect yourself from the virus. The ending of the public health emergency does not change the availability of COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccines will continue to be provided by the federal government through the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. It's also anticipated that COVID-19 vaccines will transition to the private market in early fall. You can learn more details about the transitions at the Minnesota Department of Health.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
Should you delay filing for Social Security or claim early? Discover the surprising answer that trips up most retirees, and you can get up to 175% more in benefits.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Now's my favorite time of the program when we turn our attention to talk finance with Label Sternbach. He is the best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Amazon's best-selling author of Authenticity. Label, hello and welcome back, sir.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well because I'm really interested in this SS benefit. And I want to start with a big question, if that's okay. Can you really get 175% more in Social Security benefits?
You absolutely can. Now,
Come on.
Yeah, you absolutely can. This, and you can, if you look on your Social Security statement on page number one, bottom left corner, it says right over there, all the other people who are entitled to benefits under your work history and how much they will get. Now, don't be misled by the fact that it says survivor benefits, because they can still get it while you're alive. Those are not just survivor benefits.
So what do you mean they're not just survivor benefits?
So there's something called family benefits, and there are a number of people who can claim benefits on your work history. And some of them need you to file, and some of them don't need you to file for Social Security in order for them to receive it. But essentially, of all these people who can claim under your work history, so it's not just you, but all these other people, they can get, each of them individually can get up to 75% of your Social Security benefit amount. And in aggregate, right, so in total, all the people who are getting paid who are not you can get 175%.
That's a big number, and a lot of people don't know. Why don't we know this? Why is this not just common knowledge?
So there's two reasons why it's not common knowledge. Number one is because the Social Security Administration it's not exactly the easiest website to navigate. They're not putting it out there, right? They're not making it obvious of like, hey, are you entitled to benefit under somebody else's work history? That's not one of the questions they ask you when you're filing for Social Security. They don't send bulletins about it. Having said that, though, the information is there if you know where to look, right? So it's not like, you know, some secret thing that I'm telling you. It's you just Google it, family benefits, or go on the Social Security Administration's website and type in family benefits, and you will see this, including the 175, and for some people, it's even 180% the max. The other reason why most people don't know about this, aside from, you know, the fact that it's not well publicized, is the fact that one of the ways that the federal government keeps the deficit low or lower than it would be is by not paying everyone everything that they're entitled to. And the Social Security Administration is, considering that Social Security and Medicare make up about 72 to 78% of the federal budget, they are probably the biggest, the biggest bad actors when it comes to this, right? They create red tape with the intention of putting stumbling blocks and preventing people from claiming the full benefit amount, knowing that people aren't going to go through the hoops or they're not going to know that they can apply for it, so that they don't have to pay everyone that they're entitled to. Because if they paid every penny that every person was entitled to, there would not be enough money. And that's just the reality. One of the former chief economists for the Social Security Administration, and you can Google this, there's a Forbes article that he was quoted in. He said that he thinks the average Social Security beneficiary recipient shortchanges themselves by an average of $110,000. And this was like 10 years ago that he said that. So that number's only increased. And that's because they're not filing for all the benefits that they're entitled to, or they're not filing it in a way that would net them the most money.
So quick question about that. So if you're looking at these benefits from the government, should you delay getting your benefits or filing early? Where do you stand, or is there a position that fits everybody?
So let's answer the last part first. There is no one size fits all, right? So if any advisor gives you a one size fits all answer when it comes to Social Security, you run, because that person doesn't understand Social Security. Right? That's the biggest red flag is, oh, I tell all my clients to do X, Y, Z. No, all your clients are not the same. I have yet to meet two people that are in the same financial situation where the same filing strategy made sense. So that's number one. Number two is delaying the best way to get the biggest bang for your buck. And I'm going to answer that with, this is the answer that I give everyone. How much you get from Social Security is a secondary concern. Your primary concern really is your retirement lifestyle. And so the question you should be asking is, when should I file, or how much money do I need from Social Security in order for my lifestyle to be as optimal as possible? What will have the biggest impact on my retirement, you know, finances, on my savings? And that's a very different question than how do I get the most money out of Social Security? Because oftentimes it may mean, sometimes it means getting a smaller check for some people. I have people who, you know, where I did their plan and there is, you know, hands down, no doubt that them filing for Social Security early and getting it as early as possible will allow them to retire sooner and longer and have a better lifestyle. And then for other people, they should delay, right? And then for them, delaying is the best option because they really need the bigger check, or they really need the survivor benefit to kick in when one of the spouses passes away. And so the answer for each person is going to be different, but it's going to be, the answer you should be asking is, what is going to have the biggest impact on my retirement finances and my lifestyle? Because this is a check for life, right? And you, how that impacts what money you need to use to spend down your retirement, right? Your retirement accounts, what assets you're tapping into, how long you're tapping into them. Those are all really important questions. And part of that answer is going to come down to required minimum distributions, because it's going to have an impact and they work together. And so when answering this question, you need to stop playing checkers and start playing chess or calculus when it comes to retirement planning.
I read somewhere about filing for your spousal benefits and suspending your own benefits so you can get delayed retirement benefits. Is that still a thing, or is that moved over to something else?
So it is not really a thing anymore. This is one of the ways that Congress has, stopped paying benefits and has decreased the amount of money that they're paying out to retirees, is they closed what they called a loophole, but it wasn't a loophole. It was a very, very clear benefit that people got as part of their Social Security package, was that you had this ability to claim your spousal benefits without claiming your own benefits, so that your own benefit was able to delay and accrue value. And Congress said, no, we can't afford to pay this anymore. We're cutting that, and no longer will you be able to do this. And so now there's something called deemed filing, which says if you file for, in order for to claim your spousal benefit, your spouse needs to have already been claiming their benefit. And anytime you file for your benefit, you are deemed to have filed for all your benefits. So you can't say, you can't pick and choose which benefit you file for, which is why it becomes so important to not just look at how, you know, what gets you the bigger check, but look at my family as a whole, what gets them the bigger check. Because if you have a spouse, right, where one spouse was working and the other one was a homemaker, then chances are the homemaker, who may, you know, only get $100, $200, $500 from Social Security, if their spouse was working and, you know, they're going to be maxing out their Social Security, you get a much higher amount, it may pay for them to take to file early, get a smaller check, but allow their spouse to get that 50% boost in benefit so that they're getting a bigger check overall as a family.
So how do you really know? That's one great example. How do you know when it's the right time to turn on getting those benefits?
So there's two steps to this answer. And this is one of the things that we do in that free retirement and tax swap analysis that we do for really anyone who wants to take us up on it. It doesn't cost anything. But one of the questions we answer is, okay, you know, what is what are your income needs in retirement? And then we look at what your income sources are, those guaranteed income sources, which Social Security is one of them. So let's look at, you know, what it is at age 62, 65, 66, you know, full retirement age, whatever it is for you. And then, you know, what is it at age 70, right? What is it for you and your spouse? And then we can look at the combinations, right? And there's software. You can go to like opensocialsecurity.org or .com. It's a free tool. I got a link on my website. There's a few of them out there. There's paid ones where they'll do that analysis for you. And they'll say, okay, these are all the different filing strategies. And this is where you will get, you know, the maximum benefit. And you'll see there's a lot of overlap, right? Because it's month to month. Mm-hmm. And so it may be very clear that, you know, getting a bigger check, you know, by delaying or doing it early. But like I said, you know, before, you know, that gives you one set of numbers. The next set of numbers that you got to answer the question about is, what do you need in order to fund your lifestyle, right? And how does that intersect with your retirement savings, right? And where does that intersect with your requirement minimum distributions? Because Social Security is just one leg of the stool.
Interesting. I've got a very specific question for you. Mm-hmm. I'll just call this person Mary. Mary is a federal employee. Married to a person who is not a federal employee. If that person, her husband dies, can she receive her husband's SS benefits?
So that is a great question. And it really comes down to two things, right? So technically one, yes, you can get the survivorship benefit is you get whatever your spouse was getting at the time that they died, right? Assuming that they were receiving benefits, you will continue to get that check. However, if you are subject to a government pension, if you're receiving a government pension, then that amount will get reduced or can potentially get reduced. There are a whole bunch of rules about it. On your Social Security statement, it may say whether you're subject to one of those rules. But that is something that, again, you want to plan for and see if it's something that affects you or not, because that's one of those things that can affect your retirement plan and may tell you take benefits early or take them later, right? What is more important, a bigger check, you know, a smaller check up front or a larger check later, or maybe the larger check later doesn't matter because you're not going to get it.
It makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned this earlier. As we started our conversation, you said if everybody was taking the benefits, if the government was really open about all the different ways that you can receive SS benefits, that it would make us go bankrupt. So do you think that Social Security will ever go bankrupt? As you know, we got more and more financial advisors sharing this information with their clients. What do you think about the future of Social Security?
So I'm going to give you two pieces of information.
Okay.
One piece of information that they've actually taken off of the Social Security statement. This used to be on your statement, and I find it interesting that they removed it. But piece number one is that the Social Security Trust Fund, which is where these obligations get paid from, this is where the checks come from, and where when you pay Social Security tax, goes into that fund and gets invested, which the government requires, it gets invested back into the government. So that trust fund is set to deplete right now. I think it's 3033. It's a moving target. It's constantly changing, but it's set to deplete sometime in the next 10 years. At the point that it depletes, the Social Security Administration will only have Social Security taxes from which to pay benefits. Right. So right now they're estimating that they'll only be able to pay, you know, somewhere between 70% and 80% of the anticipated benefits at that point, which means that one of two things will happen. One, if Congress allows a trust fund to be depleted, in which case they will then say either they will fund Social Security another way, or they will allow benefit checks to be reduced, in which case you might get 70 to 80% less. If they do allow the benefits to be decreased, which I find very unlikely, they're more likely to decrease the ways that people, future recipients, can qualify, like what they did with the deemed filing rule. But if they were to do that, I think we would be in a lot more trouble, because So right now, you know, Social Security recipients and future Social Security recipients, at least until I think it's like 2050, are going to be the bulk of the voting population. And so as long as the bulk of the people who vote people into office, I doubt they're going to support people who cut their beneficiary checks. So at least until, you know, the voting population, the elderly voting population decreases significantly, which, you know, we're talking 20 to 30 years, I don't think that that's a concern. Now, in 20, 30 years, and, you know, we're now talking about, you know, the younger generation being in power, having more voting blocks. They're also talking it's more immigrants will have voting power. Who knows what's going to happen at that point?
And we'll ask you 30 years from now. If you'd like more information, you can visit yields4u.com. That's yields, the number four, the letter u.com. And I invite you to join us next week when we talk about how to turn your Social Security retirement accounts into an income stream in retirement. Which account should you tap into first, and how to check if your retirement accounts have a ticking bomb? I'm Freddie Bell, and more New Beginnings is straight ahead. Thanks for joining us this weekend. Today is one of my favorite days because it's International Bacon Day. It brings in a flavor fest, and whether you fry it up or bake it or wrap it, be sure to get in on the deliciousness. Everybody loves bacon, or so it seems. The average American consumes nearly 18 pounds of bacon each year. It's not unheard of for bacon sales to reach $4 billion. Americans love the food so much that 65% of them would support bacon as a national food. It's not just Americans, however, who are eating the delicious delicacy. Although they have different names for it, many people around the world love their bacon too. And besides the different words for bacon, this pork product is also consumed in a variety of ways. Fried bacon is very popular with eggs. Some prefer bacon bits on their salad. Some people even microwave their bacon. A large number of people even enjoy bacon on their burgers and their sandwiches. Think bacon cheeseburger, BLT, and club sandwich. Others get quite adventurous with their bacon consumption. Bacon chocolate chip cookies, bacon pumpkin quinoa, bacon wrapped dates with goat cheese and rosemary, apple bacon, stuffed sweet potato, bacon guacamole, grilled cheese, and bacon popcorn. And for all you ice cream lovers, don't worry. There are plenty of flavors that include bacon. For those who want a more healthy option, there's turkey bacon or soy bacon. However you like it, celebrate today because it's National Bacon Day.
Since its release, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell has inspired tens of thousands. And in these times, words of encouragement can be the difference. How about you? Could daily affirmations and words of encouragement make a difference in your life? Find out with your very own copy of Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Available at Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
One out of every 100 people over the age of 65 will become a victim of financial fraud.
Never saw it coming.
He wiped us out.
This must be stopped.
He told us we had no choice.
The Center for Combating Elder Financial Abuse conducts extensive research and provides comprehensive training to individuals and organizations to help prevent elder financial abuse.
He wiped us out.
How could this happen?
Join the fight at endefa.org.
Thank you for listening to New Beginnings. You can stay up to date with this show. All you have to do is go to Google or to Apple and download the Freddie Bell Radio Shows app. Yes, download the Freddie Bell Radio Shows app, and you'll be up to date on everything concerning this show and anything related to Freddie Bell. More to come. Stay with us.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
And with us now on New Beginnings is the AARP Minnesota Associate State Director, Jay Happel, who's been on the program many times, and thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And this time around, Jay, there's a lot to cover. We're going to be talking about some upcoming classes that AARP is putting on, a big data breach that happened over this summer, and it all revolves around one of the big topics that we talk about here on New Beginnings with you, fraud, scams. Let's get right into it. Talk about the fraud watch network. Let's start there.
Right. So at AARP, it really starts with our members when it comes to identity theft and fraud. People are concerned about this and they need to have the information that they can use to stay safe. So we run the Fraud Watch Network. It's a program where people can get help. They can get information. If they've been targeted by a scam, we'll help them sort it out. If they've lost money to a scam, we will help them know what to do next to make sure it doesn't get any worse than it already is. And through our Fraud Watch Network and other channels, we're aware that this summer, of all government programs, it was Medicare that announced one of their contractors has been hacked and the personal information of over 600,000 Medicare beneficiaries was stolen. And this data included their social security numbers, birth dates, driver's license, health information, all kinds of information that could be used for identity theft. And what we want people to know is this isn't everyone on Medicare. This is a lot of people. It's 600,000 people, but not everyone. So if you were someone whose information was stolen, you will be notified by Medicare and they'll offer you instructions on what to do next. And in this case, Medicare is offering people 2 years of free credit monitoring services. And that's important. I can explain more about that in a moment. Because, however, like you said to begin with, Brad, this issue is a reminder of how our information is very vulnerable. It exists in copies and copies in computer databases all over the place, all the government agencies and other organizations that you do business with have copies of your information. And unfortunately, the hackers are working around the clock to try to steal this information. So if you're thinking about the paperwork you might have in your file cabinet or keeping the credit cards that are in your wallet secure, or even the information that you put into the computer and making sure you're doing that properly, still we're at risk because our information exists in so many copies all over the place.
We're with Jay Hapla, AARP Minnesota Associate State Director here on New Beginnings this morning. And Jay, and I know you've done this in the past, but if you could, because it's so popular and so meaningful, give the listeners a few tips. I know you like to give good quality tips and how members and just the general public, how we can avoid all this nonsense.
And there is good news about all of this fraud. Well, it's annoying. And sure enough, some people are victimized and they lose way too much money. It can be very devastating. But we have very strong consumer protections in our country. And as long as people know how these programs work, then they're able to be very secure, whether it's in their online transactions or any of their financial transactions. You know, specifically with this Medicare data breach or other data breaches, two things you can do to protect against identity fraud are, one, to check your credit report regularly. And you can do this for free a few times each year. It's important that you know you're on the right website because there are imposter websites out there that will try to steal your information. So it's important to visit annualcreditreport.com. So that could be easy to remember. It's three words, annualcreditreport.com. So that's an important tip. If you look at your credit report, you'll see if there's any suspicious activity and you can stop it before you lose any money. The second tip when it comes to this data breach issues is about using strong and unique passwords for all of your websites and storing them securely. So the more digits in your password for your online account, the more secure it is. So we encourage people to use sentences or passphrases instead of passwords.
The website again is aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. Fraud Watch Network. We're with Jay Hapla, AARP, the Minnesota Associate State Director. Let's talk now about some upcoming classes that you have for spotting frauds and scams, and also Medicare 101. It's time for Medicare enrollment coming up this fall.
I do want to highlight some of our events coming up this fall. We're always offering fraud education programs for free, not just AARP members, but to the public. And we have some of these fraud seminars coming up in September. There's at least three of them that I have on my list right here. September 18th at the Mall of America, the 27th at the Hallie Q. Brown Center in St. Paul, and on October 2nd over at Sabathany in South Minneapolis. So anyone can attend these. You just have to sign up at aarp.org/mnevents. So aarp.org/mnevents, and you can come to these fraud seminars. And then also, because it is Medicare open enrollment season starting in October, this is the time of year when everyone on Medicare can choose between different plans. And I'll tell you, over the years, I've heard a lot of people take very much pride in the fact that they've had the same Medicare plan for 10 years or 20 years. And that's not necessarily the best way to go, because the way things change, you might get a better deal by using a different Medicare insurance provider. Now, we have a Medicare 101 session again at the Mall of America. It's October 11th. And then we have partnered up with the Twin Cities Area Agency on Aging. It's called Trellis. And their job, they have volunteers and staff who are trained on all of these differences in Medicare plans that happen every year. And they are offering one-on-one Medicare counseling sessions, so you can talk with them about your specific issues and what you pay for and what you need coverage for, and they'll help you navigate between all these different plans. And these one-on-one sessions are available on the second and third Fridays of the month in September, October, and November. And this is a little different. To set up one of these one-on-one Medicare appointments, you call the Senior Linkage Line, and that number is 800-333-2433.
All right. I want to give that number again. It always takes me two or three times before I can, before it gets through the old melon here. 800-333-2433. Again, for the Medicare counseling sessions, the info center, the phone number, 800-333-2433. And for the spotting frauds and scams, that's aarp.org/mnevents. Jay Hapala, AARP Minnesota Associate State Director, thank you so much for your time again today on New Beginnings.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. And here are today's words to the wise. Eyes are the windows of the soul. Today's words to the wise. Eyes are the windows of the soul. Look deeply into someone's eyes and you may glimpse their emotions and true feelings. They reveal unspoken stories, joys, and pains. Connections lie in meaningful gazes, expressing what words cannot. Remember, the eyes reflect the essence of who we are, and through them, we share our innermost selves with the world. So be mindful of the messages your eyes convey, because they can leave a lasting impression on the hearts of others. Words to the wise, and be on the lookout for my brand new book entitled Outburst. I'm Freddie Bell, and we'll be right back.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
If you have a positive COVID-19 test, it's important to stay home and away from others for a minimum of 5 full days from the date of the symptoms or the date you had a positive test result. When near people who live with you, wear a well-fitting mask. You can return to most activities after 5 full days of staying away from others if your symptoms are getting better. Continue to wear a mask around others indoors through day 10. A message from the Minnesota Department of Health. As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
when I was graduating from high school, like our friend Jana Christensen, I needed a suit, and I went out, and of course, I picked out the more expensive suits, and I found one, and Dad said, well, let's get that. And I said, oh, Dad, it's expensive. It's too expensive for me. And I'll never forget his response. Son, any suit in this world that I can afford, my son can afford. And he purchased that beautiful suit. I wore it for many years. Wouldn't fit anymore. But it sounded early on like a unity principle before I knew what a unity principle or even what unity was. And that is to realize we're all children of a prodigious Father. Whatever source can provide, His creation deserves, can receive. That's how my father taught me, not unity as I teach it, but he taught me principles of life. He taught me promises should be fulfilled. If the source is great and wealthy, great and wealthy gifts can be provided for those who ask. Whatever I can afford, my children can afford. Because I did have friends, and a lot of my friends in school came from extremely wealthy families, like the Halls of Hallmark. But I noticed some of them would have lesser things and would make comments when they saw something beautiful in a store. Oh, that's too good for me. That's too good for me. Where in the fact their parents were exceedingly wealthy. Well, we all make our own decisions. We all parent as we feel we are guided. But the essential idea that Jesus tried to get across in the idea of this prodigal son is that our prodigious Father will always welcome us home, will always provide new good, will always give us shelter. I like to think it's why Unity South has that motto out on the sign. The prodigious Father kind of teaches us of that ideal that Unity South is embracing, loving, empowering. That our community is like that prodigious, generous place. Where people may enter these doors, they know that they'll be embraced and welcomed to start. Then they'll be loved and made part of our family. And finally, they'll be empowered because we have faith in them. And we continually remind them of what they're capable of. And like my father showed me, we won't do it for them. We cannot heal each individual, but we can teach them about the potential of healing within them. We cannot make them feel like they belong to our community. But we can do our part and open the doors. Be welcoming, encouraging, not ignoring, really welcoming them. And we can empower them by showing our faith in anyone who comes into this circle. We believe in you. We know the power within you. And we will know that power and be faithful to it, especially when, like that prodigal son, you may have doubts and fears and have any sense of worthlessness or that you do not deserve the best that life can provide. So invite us for a moment to turn to the silence, to enter what we call silent unity. That is when we come together holding and affirming an idea. Not each of you alone, but as a community. I invite you to close your eyes if you choose. Become aware of your breath. Take a deep breath just to remember, wow, your connection with life. It's in every breath. It's in every pulse of your heart. You're one with the infinite, with the power that brought you into this world and created all good things. Spirit of wisdom, help us to remember our fathers with a devoted love for the guidance and provision they brought into our lives. We remember clearly and with focus all the human qualities they demonstrated for our welfare. Now, being honest with ourselves, if any of our expectations were not met, we go the extra mile. We become prodigious. We release in forgiveness now any resentment about in any way that our Father did not meet our needs, our expectations. We allow our fathers to live their lives in a manner in which they can progress on their unique spiritual path.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
Each year, financial fraud steals up to $37 billion from senior citizens.
It was devastating.
What are we going to do?
Many lose their entire life savings.
They told us we had no choice.
The Center for Combating Elder Financial Abuse conducts extensive research and provides comprehensive training to individuals and organizations to help prevent elder financial abuse.
You wiped us out.
How could this happen?
Join the fight at endefa.org.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
On the lighter side this week on New Beginnings, a woman in Italy sued her wedding dress designer after the nearly $4,000 garment fell apart at the altar, exposing her bottom to her guest. The 30-year-old bride said her wedding day went down the tubes because of faulty sewing on her dress. Her lawyer says she was left extremely embarrassed because the stitching of that dress came apart, slid down, revealed everything to the entire congregation. Someone on social media found a crash diet from a Vogue body and beauty book from the 1970s. It's called Wine and Eggs and promises you'll lose 5 pounds in 3 days. Breakfast, one egg, hard-boiled, one glass of white wine, dry, preferably Chablis, black coffee, lunch, 2 eggs, hard-boiled is best, but poached if necessary, 2 glasses of white wine, black coffee, dinner, 5-ounce steak, grilled with black pepper, lemon juice, remainder of the white wine, 1 bottle allowed per day, and black coffee. Let me know if that works. And what doesn't belong on a burger? Let me know. You can call me at 888-639-9738. And they say, and you know how they are, that drinking coffee after a workout could be the key to building better muscles. Researchers think consuming caffeine after exercise helps your muscles recover faster and can improve an athlete's performance. A team of Australian researchers found that after exercise, caffeine resulted in athletes having 66% higher glycogen levels, the muscle's primary fuel source during exercise. Just for fun this week on New Beginnings. That's our show, and thanks to our special guests for stopping by and sharing information that we hope can change lives. If you missed any of today's show, you can subscribe to our podcast or just Google Freddie Bell or stop by my website of the same name. Thanks for listening, and remember that each day is a chance for a new beginning. See you next week.